Board Game Bros. Hello, listeners.
Hey, everyone.
It's another episode of the Board Game Brothers podcast. I'm Jeffrey Craig.
And I'm Matthew Craig.
We are brothers in real life.
And game designers in real life.
And this is our podcast where we talk about board games. So today we're doing a little something different, but not too different than what we usually do. Usually on our podcast, we like to take an episode to pick a single board game, talk about how to play it, talk about how to win, and talk about how it was designed. And today we have decided to instead cover two board games.
Yes, two board games that are about half an episode's worth of content.
Yeah, they're pretty simple board games because they are party games. But they're two party games that we picked up very recently. We played them at Geekway. We fell in love with them instantly. I picked up copies of these games as soon as I could. One of them I got at the convention itself. The other one was sold out at the convention, so I had to wait a little bit to get my copy. But I ended up getting it, and we've played them both a bunch. And today we're going to share our love for them with you.
Right.
So, Matthew, what games are we talking about today?
We're talking about the game Subtext, designed by Wolfgang Warsch, and Pitchstorm, designed by Ben Kepner. And I guess let's start with Subtext.
Sure. So, knows, we will be time stamping when we switch over to talking about Pitchstorm. So check the podcast episode description for that.
Right. And so just to reiterate, Subtext was designed by Wolfgang Warsch and published by Edition Spielwise in 2019.
Now, if that name Wolfgang Warsch sounds familiar to you, that's because we've covered two of this guy's other games.
Right, specifically The Mind and Quacks of Kedlinburg.
Exactly. So this guy, he's made a lot of good games. And Subtext is, well, it's much lighter than Quacks. And it's more of a party game than The Mind because you do get to talk during it. So the Subtext, just to give a short description of the game, as short as I could make it. In Subtext, players try to hint at a word on a card they are dealt by drawing a subtle clue, drawing with a pencil on paper. Each round, one player takes the role of the dealer. They draw one card to see its word, then shuffle it with more cards and deal them to the other players so that each other player has one card, and one of them, unknown to all, including the dealer, has the same card that the dealer saw. They are henceforth called the partner. Everyone then draws a picture that is subtly related to the word that they saw. After the drawings are revealed, each player, including the dealer, votes on which drawing corresponds with the dealer's drawing. Everyone who guessed correctly, guessing the partner's drawing correctly, gets a point, except the dealer and partner, who instead will earn 1 point for each other player that guessed incorrectly. But they only receive those points if they both guess the partner correctly. And then the first player to reach some arbitrary point threshold wins.
Yeah.
So essentially, the dealer gets a word, then he draws a bunch of other cards. These cards have words on them. Draws a bunch of other cards, shuffles them together, deals them to the rest of the players. They see their word. And at this point, one of them has the same word as the dealer, but nobody knows who it is, including the dealer. So then everybody draws their drawing. They show their drawings. Everyone tries to vote for who they think was the partner. And the points go, like I just said it. So let's talk a little bit more about gameplay and strategy.
Right. So in this game, you are supposed to, quote unquote, draw like pretty vague sort of abstract representations of stuff. So that
I think in the rule book, it doesn't necessarily say abstract.
Sure.
Maybe like a mental abstraction. Simple. But visually, you're kind of supposed to draw a real thing.
Yeah. But you want obviously something that only the partner would know. Or would recognize. So because the partner and the dealer only get points if they guess each other. So you have to at least draw something that the dealer would know
or would connect. Yeah, if you're too abstract. Like, for example, there was one, I think one game we played, somebody drew, I want to say it was Mickey, as in Mickey Mouse. That was the card that they received. And that was the card for the dealer. And the person that receive that card, the partner, they drew like a Venn diagram of three circles, but arranged so that they could look like a Mickey Mouse head and ears.
Oh,
but,
yeah.
but they were sort of overlapping like a Venn diagram or whatever a three circle Venn diagram would be called. Yeah. And that ended up being too abstract for even the dealer to guess correctly.
Yeah. But so you still want it to be like up in the air as far as what it could relate to, because mm-hmm. ideally, you know, you want people to not guess it correctly if you do guess it with the partner.
I think the way I would put it is
you want to make it adjacent to the word, but still kind of obvious what it is. If that makes sense.
So they provide an example of what you could do in the rule book for the word plane. So if you receive the word plane, you don't want to draw an airplane, because that would be too obvious and all the other players would be able to guess that, meaning that you as the partner would not be able to get any bonus points. They give this as a bad hint, somebody with a parachute. I'd say there's at least a slight connection there, because the person with a parachute probably jumped out of a plane. So you can kind of see that. A better hint, they give a suitcase or luggage. So there's a connection in that you take luggage on a plane, but it's even less obvious than the parachute person. And then they give as a difficult hint, a no smoking sign, because you can't smoke on planes. But a no smoking sign has almost nothing to do with a plane itself.
Right.
If you just were to see a no smoking sign, you know, with no context, you wouldn't know. But if you had plane, you might be able to figure that out.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. So one example from a game we played was the card was zombie, mm-hmm. or the word was zombie, and both of us drew brains.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were slightly different illustrations of a brain, but that's like something adjacent to a zombie. I mean, obviously, you wouldn't want to draw the exact same thing, but you know what I mean.
Right.
Yeah.
So the short of it is, don't draw what the word is. Draw something related to the words. Maybe something that you would find near the word or in whatever the word is.
Yeah.
Or you would draw something that's, you know, related to the word in some way. There's some kind of connection there. And you want to make it subtle enough that only the dealer would know. And you want to do this with every word, even though you won't get to be the partner every time. You want to do this with every word, especially because sometimes you might draw the same thing as the partner or something very similar. For example, in the example I gave earlier with Mickey, where the partner drew a Venn diagram that looked kind of like Mickey Mouse, somebody else received another animal related clue and they ended up drawing like a real, like more realistic mouse. And so it threw off a lot of people.
Yeah.
And so the only person that would know that realistic mouse isn't the one related to Mickey Mouse and Disney or whatever is the person that drew the realistic mouse, because they know that they didn't get anything related to like Disney or Mickey. So they'd be looking for the correct answer, which would probably be the three Venn diagram circles.
Yeah.
But because they drew subtly enough, they threw off other players. And so other players weren't able to get those points, if this is, you know, all about points.
Yeah.
And I actually just checked the rule book, and it doesn't actually end at a point threshold. They just have a set number of rounds. And the number of rounds is they essentially just say like for four or five players, everybody gets two chances of being the dealer. For six to eight players, everyone gets one chance to be the dealer. But I say just play as much as you want.
Yeah, that's how most party games are.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Do you have anything else for strategy?
Not really. I think that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. After a while, you'll kind of pick up on like images that can fit into multiple categories. Like there's mm-hmm. a lot to deal with baking and desserts. So you kind of learn to make it a little more specific in one way, but that could be your advantage. So like, you know, there's ones that are like muffin and cake and baker, but then there's clown. And if you specifically indicate that the pie is like sideways or flying through the air, it could catch, like, the person who has it as clown might understand that, but the people who otherwise don't know might get confused with everything else.
Right. So you're kind of saying you'll pick up after a little bit of like what kinds of words you're dealing with. And yeah. So with that knowledge, you can throw people off a little bit.
Yeah.
With your drawings. Okay. So we could talk a little bit about the design. There's not much to this game's design. I mean, there's just very simple components, and a lot of the gameplay comes from people drawing, which, you know, you don't need an actual component for that. You just have scraps of paper and pencils.
Right.
One thing the game does have that is, I guess, worth talking about a little bit is how they have 5 sets of words on every card. Now, I thought, so every card has 5 words on it, and those words are all marked by a Roman numeral, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And at the start of the game, you place a Roman numeral card at the top of the board that shows like which set of words you're looking at for that game, which set of words you're drawing from. And I thought that 1 through 5 was sort of like a difficulty scale. And so if you were using the 5 words, then you would have it, you'd find it more difficult to think of like subtle ways of indicating those words. But I'm looking at the cards now, and it doesn't really look like there's much of a difference between 1 through 5 in any kind of complexity.
Yeah.
Just to read one example of a card. This is in order from 1 to 5, it goes midnight, swarm, handcuffs, allergy, yeast. So, I can't really see how any of those get more or less difficult than any of the other ones.
Right, yeah. It almost seems like they just wanted to maximize the amount of options per component.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of party games will have multiple things on a card, multiple options, multiple categories, and a lot of them do have, like, difficulty scaling that way, but this kind of just lets you play through the game more times with more different stuff. Without having to use a completely new set of cards.
Right. And I don't really even see why this game would need a difficulty slider.
Yeah.
I mean, what it would do is it would say, like, the people playing would have, like, a more difficult time, you know, guessing the exact word that both the partner and the dealer received, because it'll be a more obscure word every time. But in the case of this game, it also leads to a case where you might be dealt a card with a word that you don't understand, or that is unfamiliar to you. And there's a chance that that word was the dealer's word. So you can't just pitch it and draw a new word, because you might be pitching the only card that corresponds with the dealer.
Yeah, that can be kind of unfortunate.
Right. So there's no difficulty slider, but yeah, they did this like you said, to use one component for multiple uses, add, you know, replayability, or just add basically 5 times the content with, you know, this much components. I guess the way that they did it is kind of unique, because in most other party games, you know, they just have them listed and usually you just kind of pick for yourself. Like in what's it called? Like
Concept.
I guess like in Concept, it's just totally up to you. In other games, if you choose a more difficult option, you might get rewarded with bonus points. In Concept, it's just up to you which word you want to go for. There's no rules for that.
Yeah.
In this game, they kind of have to do it this way with the Roman numeral on the board. And because you just have to make sure that the word that the dealer looked at is the exact same word on that card that the partner is looking at.
Right. So subtext is, I think, an example of a drawing game where artistic skill doesn't necessarily mean you're better at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of words that, like, they can be pretty well approximated in terms of what you can draw in relation to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think you can make a lot that are just, like, pretty basic shapes, and it'll do fine. You don't have to put in a lot of detail.
Sure. I mean, look at the card that I just read from. The first word was midnight. You know, everyone can draw a star. Everyone knows how to draw a star or a moon. Everyone can draw a clock, you know, a circle with a hand pointing to the 12 top, o'clock yeah. position. Even though that's probably, you know, everyone can draw Z's.
Yeah.
So like someone's sleeping. So yeah, there's plenty of simple ways to go about drawing hints for midnight.
Right, and yeah,
you know, handcuffs, I guess you might have to be a little more artistic there, but you can draw like a police badge. You know, that's not it's not a complicated shape.
Yeah. Or, you know, like a jail cell.
Yeah, you could draw a jail cell. That's just a bunch of lines.
Yeah.
A police siren is just a trapezoid.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think this is a good pursuit for a lot of drawing-based party games. Mm-hmm. You know, like when we mentioned Jackbox, they try to do that a lot. Like, because, you know, if you want a party game, you want everybody to feel included, and you don't want people to feel ostracized. And bringing in artistic skill can be a quick way to ostracize people if you don't mm-hmm. have a way to alleviate it. So, yeah.
Right. When you're playing Pictionary, you know, you want to be on the team with the person that draws the best.
Yeah.
But, in this game, drawing well could actually be your downfall because it could make the thing that you're trying to draw more obvious.
Yeah.
And so, then, like, if you draw a mouse poorly, some people might not even recognize it as a mouse, except for the person who's looking for something that's mouse related.
Exactly. Yeah. Because, it at the worst case, you would want people to guess yours and not the correct one just mm-hmm. so they don't get a point. So, yeah.
I would say just anecdotally that I've played this game with a bunch of different people. And I don't think I've heard any complaints about someone feeling that their drawing skill was inadequate for this game.
Yeah. If anything, restrictions breed creativity in this case.
Mm-hmm.
This is a deception game where deception happens incidentally very easily. Like, mm-hmm. it gives you the feeling of deceiving people, but that's often not your goal when you're drawing something. Like, we talk about, mm-hmm. you know, drawing something that's specific enough, but also kind of vague. But for the most part, you just want to draw something that the dealer would know, and that the other players might not connect at first, which I guess is sort of deceptive, but like a lot of the higher level, like trying to trick people and stuff like that, just kind of happens naturally.
You know, it might actually be a little bit planned. There are a lot of cards in the game. So even just by drawing from one, you know, set of words, you're probably never going to draw the same word twice in a single session. But there's, like you mentioned, there are kind of a lot of overlaps in like each set of words. Like when I've played the first set of words a couple of times, because until now I didn't realize that there wasn't any kind of difficulty and I could have just been using set two or three with no problem. But, in set one, you know, like you mentioned, there's like cake, and pie. There's like gladiator. I think there's gladiator and zoo, which can both have like a lion
in a circle, or
you know, cage kind of connection there. But there's tornado and there's storm. So there's a lot of words that have similarities within the different word sets that will kind of, you know, enable those kinds of misconceptions or mistakes or confusions, which right. is probably a good thing, because I think it's pretty pleasant and fun to see a couple of similar things and have to figure out which thing is the real partner and which one just happened to get a similar word.
Exactly. And that sort of, it feels like that's the intended gameplay effect. Mm-hmm. You know, so having the design flow to that's really good, really smart.
Yeah, that's intentional. And it leads to probably one of the better experiences in this game. Like one of the more fun experiences in this game, which is when a handful of people, two or three people draw very similar things.
Yeah.
I think that's always a fun surprise.
Mm-hmm.
A fun moment in this game. I don't have anything else to say for subtext.
Something I think is fun is that the little player indicators, the little player pawns, are all little drawings. Like, there's a dog, there's a T-Rex. I just think for a drawing game, that's a really nice theming element.
Oh, yeah, they're all kind of like little line drawings.
Little caricatures, hot dog, yeah.
Rabbit coming out of a hat. A cowboy.
Oh, rabbit coming out of a hat. How thematic.
A cow being abducted by a UFO.
Yeah.
A palm tree. Yeah. Maybe you can get some ideas from those while you're playing.
Yeah.
One thing against this game is that it does not come with enough paper itself. But I guess you can kind of think of that as like, it's conserving paper.
Yeah.
It's good for the environment. Instead of putting a whole bunch of scrap paper for you to use, it's, you know, what's stopping you from just making your own scrap paper? It's no big deal.
Exactly. It at least saves costs for the publisher. They don't have to put pads of paper or whatever in there. Yeah. All right. Anything else for subtext?
Nope. I got nothing else for subtext.
All right. Then let's switch over to Pitch Storm.
All right.
Which, again, was designed by Ben Kepner and published by Skybound Games in 2018.
Okay. So, in Pitch Storm, one player or team, I think I'm just going to use the single player players as individuals rule set for the short description, and then we can talk about the teams in a sec. Okay, so in Pitch Storm, one player takes the role of an executive, and the rest of the players must pitch their idea for a movie to the executive. At the beginning of each round, each player that is not the executive chooses either plot or character, then draws three cards from the corresponding deck, selects one that they will use in their pitch, discards the rest, and then draws the top card of the other deck face down, so that in the end, they have either a plot or character that they know what the card says, and they have another card, the other of the two, that they do not have any idea what it says. Then players take turns giving 45-second pitches to the executive, revealing their character and plot and weaving them together in a movie pitch. Now, at any point during that pitch, the executive can stop the 45-second timer and give the player a note card. At the beginning of the round, the executive would have drawn three note cards. They deal the player one of them, which has some sort of modification that the player must take into account in their pitch, and then their pitch will resume. Once the 45 seconds is up, then they get a chance. I think this is a house rule that we do, but we give them a chance to give their movie a title. And then play passes to every other player till all pitches are given, and the executive chooses which pitch they like the most. So that is Pitch Storm.
Right.
So there's plots, there's plot cards, there's character cards, and there are note cards.
Right.
Now, just to give a short, you know, example of what happens when there's more players. So that rule set is when there's like 3 to 5 players playing the game and everyone is solo. But if you have 6 players or more and you have an even number of players, then you break out into teams.
Right. Yeah. And so in teams, instead of having a hand of plot or characters and one you don't know, each member of the team, because it's teams of two, will draw either 3 plot or 3 characters. They choose one of those to play and discard the rest. So you still won't know what one of your cards is, but your teammate will.
Right. You can't discuss with your teammate what you just drew from the plot or character deck. You just have to pick one.
Right.
And use it for the pitch.
Right. And likewise, the teams also form teams of executives. And each member of the executive team will draw 3 notes, and each member of the executive team can stop the timer once during a pitch to add their own note.
Right.
So there can be up to 2 notes in a pitch.
Right. And because of all this, pitches can take a minute instead of 45 seconds.
Right.
So Pitch Storm, this is a very, very fun game. It takes a certain kind of play group to enjoy it, I guess, just because it's heavy improvisation. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like legit improv. And so you either got to have a quick mind or you got to be able to just like power through things and just kind of talk your way through things.
Yeah.
With this game. But I mean, if everybody is just equally kind of uncomfortable with the concept, that can still make for a fun game.
Right. You can always lean into being bad at improv.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I've done at least once.
So let's give some examples of plots and characters, because they go from like goofy to cheesy to cliche. So, okay. So I just drew two random character cards. The first one I drew says a magical nanny with a wealthy family, or a magical nanny for a wealthy family. So basically they're just describing Mary Poppins, but without getting sued.
Yeah.
Their second one. Oh, they also have scene directions.
Yeah.
In on the card. So that says interior governor's mansion, a magical nanny for a wealthy family. The other one, interior hip vampire club, an overweight vampire that just wants to fit in. So you can see the gamut these things can run.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a lot of tropes, a lot of kind of mixture of cliches.
So now I just drew two random plot cards. The first one I drew says flees from a natural disaster in a near future apocalypse. So I think we've all seen those movies.
Mm-hmm.
The other one I drew says gets trapped in the body of a bear.
I think we've all seen those movies.
I think we've all seen that. Yeah, those movies. So you could see how a magical nanny for a wealthy family fleeing from a natural disaster in a near future apocalypse, you know, that sends your mind reeling. Where do you go from there? I think there's a lot of places you can go from there. That seems like a pretty fun movie to pitch. Mm-hmm. The other one, an overweight vampire that just wants to fit in gets trapped in the body of a bear. That one's much more difficult to, you know, build on top of. But that's the fun of this game, is that you just go for it.
Yeah.
And sometimes you can totally pull it off, and sometimes you just kind of spout nonsense. But either way, it can be pretty fun and funny.
Yeah.
Now I'll draw two examples of notes. All right, here we go. So for the first note I drew, it says, we want this movie to be super smart. So, like, add some math or something. this is the character of the executive in this game. The executive is very
inept.
Out of touch. The other one I said, what if the main character was a kid whose parents just died? People love that. This is a very funny game.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and yeah, there's a lot of these that are like audience testing, a lot that's like what's hip these days. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of corporate sponsors.
There's a handful of drawing more cards from decks, what if they were a superhero team with blank and blank? Draw two random characters. So what if the nanny was on a superhero team with a bunch of kids looking for looking for adventure during summer vacation, and an authoritarian grocery store manager?
Right. Or there's also a lot that build upon previous pitches.
Right. There's some of the plots and characters. Like, I think I saw a plot the other day that was like, falls in love with pick the romantic interest from a previously pitched movie, or like, what if this were a sequel to a previously pitched movie, is a note that you could get.
Yeah.
So this is a fun game. It's a very funny game. Yeah, the cards themselves are pretty funny. So even if you just described what the card said, like, even if you received the note, what if all the characters were trapped by a blizzard? You just say, okay, so yeah, they're all trapped by a blizzard. The nanny and the authoritarian grocery store manager and the bunch of kids, they're trapped by a blizzard. And can you just imagine the shenanigans they'll get into?
Right, yeah.
Just imagine that. You still end up with a pretty funny concept, but it's kind of when you can get creative, where things shine through. So let's talk strategy, Matthew.
Okay, so... first of all, it's better to say something than nothing.
If you want to talk strategy in that way, you know, there's plenty of like handbooks out there for how to, you know, be good at improv.
Yeah.
Yes, and all that.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, plenty of stuff to look at there. For anyone who doesn't know what yes and means, that just means that whatever your partner says, you go along with it. You never say no. You always just keep moving forward with your ideas.
Yeah.
I personally just like to, if I'm stuck and I don't know what to say, I'll just say the first thing that comes to mind.
Yeah.
And even if it doesn't make any sense or have any kind of tie to what I'm thinking about, I'll just work it backwards from there, because it's easier to draw a connection between two things than just to, you know, try and say the perfect thing out of nowhere.
Yeah. I think when you read your card, try to think about like the first two sentences that you're going to say about it.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, if you have like the nanny for a you know, bunch of children, or what, or the magical nanny for a bunch of children, you know, think about who the nanny is and maybe one fact about them that your partner can build off.
Right. I personally like to try and cast the character before the pitch is over. So if I received the overweight vampire, I would say, like, fellas, Christian Bale is willing to put on a lot of weight for this one.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. Casting the character can be pretty funny, especially if you can pull out some like obscure actors' names.
Right. I like to mix in a personality trait there, mm-hmm. in a similar vein, one that, you know, could fit with the character, if I have character.
Uh-huh.
I mean, for plot, I like to think of some like fun take on it already, you know. So like,
yeah.
One of them was looking for, or yeah, it was like one of the plots I had was looking for the lost city of El Dorado, and I was like, what if there was like an evil businessman involved? And then from there, I could work that into whatever the character was while still having another pathway to go from.
Right. Because you didn't draw a card with an evil character on it, like a plot that has a clear villain to it, it doesn't mean that your pitch can't involve villains. Your pitch can involve anything, even stuff that's not on the cards that you drew.
Yeah.
As long as the character, probably the main character of your pitch and the general plot of it follows the cards that you got.
Right. It almost gives you like an escape route if you can't think of anything.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously you don't want to like try to fit to a plan.
Yeah. In a similar vein, it's kind of funny. It could be funny to misdirect people what your character or plot is before you reveal it, you know, whichever one you know. So if you know what the character is, you know, it's an overweight vampire, you know, that overweight vampire could also be a bunch of other things. Like it could be a student looking for adventure over the summer. It could be, you know, an alien from another planet. It could be whatever. And you can start your pitch off that way, but then like immediately pivot it once you reveal the actual character.
Yeah.
Now, there's something that after I played it a couple times, a couple people have done successfully, and that is normally when you're playing this game and you're giving your pitch in teams or solo, usually do the character first and then you do the plot, because that's how the cards are sort of set up. The cards themselves have a card border to them that makes it look like they fit together to make one, you know, sheet of paper.
A
you know,
manuscript.
The bottom connects to the top. Yeah, manuscript. But so it kind of makes sense to go top to bottom character to plot. But I've seen to great effect some players and teams go plot then character. So instead of saying, you know, interior, the house of a governess, a magical nanny for a wealthy family must protect their small village from a horde of bandits. Instead, you could say, we open on a small village being besieged by a horde of bandits, and only one person can stop them. And that person, a magical nanny for a wealthy family.
Yeah.
And then you go from there.
Yeah. Almost. You can almost like word it like a movie trailer instead of necessarily a pitch.
Definitely draw from movie trailer cadence for this.
Yeah.
You know, that's one kind of character you can affect.
Mm-hmm.
If not like the fast talking, you know, person from New York or something.
Yeah.
The old timey Hollywood guy.
If you are one of the executives,
mm-hmm.
I think my favorite thing is to throw in a note that is for the most part a complete curveball.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's why I love the corporate sponsor ones, because it always kind of makes the gears reverse direction in the player's head.
Right.
You know what I mean? But also, if you see somebody who's like having trouble, it could be good to just give them something that can kind of help move them along. You know, I think that might be getting into design a bit, but like, this is a good game to balance that out with that. If somebody just right. can't seem to figure out what they're doing and they can't come up with anything, give them a slow ball.
Right. It's like, I just saw a note, I'm going through the notes now, I just read one that said, can we add more time travel? That seems like an easy one to add to any pitch, because time travel, you know, whatever, they go back in time and then they do something. It's not hard to see what your characters can do if they were to go back in time, maybe even just to solve the problem that is their the plot. But then there's like, what if everything you just said was actually the setup to an elaborate heist? And if nothing they just said had anything to do with a heist or a bank or money, then that one is a very difficult one. So yeah, you can kind of see like, this pitch is kind of floundering. Let's throw them a curve, a softball, or, you know, they're nailing this. I want to see how they can handle this curveball.
Exactly. Yeah. And when you're working in teams, I really love to play off what the other executive plays.
Mm-hmm.
So when we were playing last night, Jeffrey and I were on a team, and he played one that like added a genre to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I played another one that involved adding another genre. Like, I don't remember exactly what it was, but you added something for like a post-apocalyptic movie, or no, it was like a Hunger Games battle royale. And then I right. added a spooky monster, and I framed it as like, all right, I'm going to add a fourth genre to this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or
so
yeah.
A tip for easy mode is just, you know, obvious. A lot of these obviously correspond to real movies, so you could just pitch a sequel to that real movie as your movie. So if you receive the plot of searching for a cure of a deadly plague, you know, maybe you take that as like I Am Legend, you know, a person in a zombie apocalypse world trying to search for the cure to the zombies. But our protagonist is instead a competitive figure skater training to win the Grand Prix.
Right.
So now you say it's I Am Legend 2, Ice Am Legend.
Yeah.
And then you just kind of work it out from there. So you always have that option available to you.
Mm-hmm.
If you're in a team, there's one thing you shouldn't do, and that's start a thought, but don't finish it and toss it over to the other player instead.
Yeah.
If you start talking, finish your sentence. I don't care what you say. You have to finish it.
Yeah. I did that last night. I thought yes. it was funny.
It was funny, but we ended
only
up losing.
Once.
Wait, did we end up losing that round?
We retroactively won.
Oh, okay. We cinched it.
Yeah. It was retconned.
Yeah. Let's see.
I think that's it for a strategy for me, really.
Okay, let's talk about design.
Yeah.
So this is just kind of like a clear iteration of the two decks party game.
Call it's now and response.
It's sort of call and response, but now the call is, or the response, I suppose. I don't know. What is the call here?
I was going to say.
The call is pitch a movie. The response is two cards instead of one, but then there's like an extra call and response added to that, a second call and response surrounding the notes.
Yeah. I think one advantage this has over the other like typical style of stuff is that the judge is much more active and involved during mm-hmm. the rounds, because the judge actively wants to like find a good spot to put in a note. Like they kind of have to listen really intently to what's going on.
Oh, I want to add one more thing about giving notes, and that is don't give a note in the last 15 seconds of the pitch.
Yeah, because to be fair, that's just going to not do anything.
Yeah, I mean, if you do give a note in the last 15 seconds and they're unable to, you know, respond to it in that 15 seconds, that's your own fault.
Yeah, that's on you.
That's not the fault of the pitchers.
Yeah.
The pitchers. Okay, so.
The picture pitchers.
So, yeah, and it would make sense that the judge should be more involved in this game because the parts where people are, you know, showing their responses takes way longer in this game. In another game like Cards Against Humanity, you know, you just get all the cards and then you play all the cards and you read them out and that's it. That took like 10 seconds, 15 yeah. seconds to do that. In this game, you know, it takes people 45 seconds to a full minute to go through their response.
Even more if the judge takes more time adding right. notes.
Right.
So yeah, like it's active for the judge in that regard. And the existence of cards that care about previous pitches means that even the people who aren't part of that two-side arrangement still are rewarded for paying attention.
Mm-hmm.
Because in the future they might want to reference something like that.
Right. Yeah, I mean, you could get penalized if you weren't paying attention and you get dealt a note card that tells you to make a sequel to a previously pitched movie. And if you weren't paying attention, you know, then you're just not going to know what to say.
Yeah.
You're not going to remember what that movie was about.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that makes this game very replayable is that it's almost entirely player input. You're getting prompted by these cards, but the actual like substance of this game comes from what the players actually pitch, what they come up with. So like in party games like Cards Against Humanity, if you've played that, you know, a certain number of times, then you've pretty much seen every card available in the game. Mm-hmm. And after a while, it becomes very stale. But in this game, you know, not only are you making combinations of cards, so right off the bat, you know, there's a ton of variants that comes from that. You're getting like, you know, multiple more outcomes. But you know, not only that, but depending on who gets the cards, the pitch could be totally different. And so this game is pretty replayable,
right?
In
yeah.
that regard.
And
then you also add on the notes. So, I mean, like, there's just so many dimensions to this game that make every time you play it completely different than the last time you played it.
Right.
The only thing that's the same is that it could be the people playing it, which, you know, depending on the player, they might fall back on certain tropes or tricks, like just pitching sequels to existing movies because they got a card that relates to an existing movie. You know, if there's somebody that just constantly does that, then I could see how this game could get kind of stale. But, you know, if your team is if the people you're playing with are just a little bit creative, then this game can go a long way in terms of replayability.
Right. Yeah. Shoot, I was gonna say something but I forgot. One thing that I like about this is sort of incidental based on the groups I've played it with, but it felt like there really quickly started to become like a world building mythos in terms of the previous films. Mm-hmm. Like, not only do you have cards that directly reference those, but I started to see people like indirectly referencing older pitches.
Mm-hmm.
To in the point where like this fake world and all these fake movies being produced were like I said, a whole world that I don't know, it's just an interesting world building element you don't see in party games.
Right. Like you said, there's cards that just force you to do that, but there's oftentimes when we play these games where it just happens anyways.
Yeah.
Like people just decide that they want to make a sequel to a previously pitched movie.
Yeah. So this does something that Superfight, another Skybound Games game, did, which is that, I mean, we mentioned that, like, a lot of the cards are kind of oblique references to, certain, like, film or property or whatever you know, so, like, Mary Poppins, but a lot of them are just kind of, like, very genre-tropic type of stuff, that relates to a lot of different movies, which is good because, like, if you've seen one of them, you know what's gonna what it relates to. But also, like, it very much it wants to be played by people who like movies in that regard, if that makes sense.
Yeah,
I guess what I'm trying to say is, like, the tropes are recognizable by people who watch a pretty good amount of movies, and improving would be easier for those people, I guess.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, you can always draw on those tropes from other movies and movies where you weren't necessarily prompted with that trope.
Yeah.
You've just got a wealth of knowledge of how movies generally go and what kinds of movies, you know, you get made, and then you can just kind of take that knowledge and interpret it into your pitch.
And this can be a negative thing, like playing super fight with people that aren't familiar as much with, like, comic books and anime and stuff can be kind of tricky, but I think movies are such, like, a widespread thing that this is much more universally applicable as a game.
Super Fight is a pretty good comparison for this game, just because Super Fight also had a lot of player input.
Yeah.
Because Super Fight was all about, like, debating whether your superhero would beat the other player's superhero.
Right. There was a lot of storytelling involved.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, I mean, they're both published by the same company.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. I like that.
Anything else you have to say?
I like that every character card has a location on it. As sort of like an additional prompt if you need it.
Right. Like, and I've noticed most people ignore these prompts, but it can be used. It's still a little extra that can help you, you know, get your mind moving.
Yeah. Sometimes the plot does relate to a location like El Dorado or trapped on a deserted island. Mm-hmm. But, you know, at times where you don't have that and you need just something to set the scene, it gives you that right there.
Although, I mean, you'll have to kind of get used to that contradiction, because that will come up in notes all the time.
Yeah.
Like, notes do not care what the pitch has already said. It's always going to throw an entirely massive wrench in the plans of whatever the pitchers had started.
Right. Yeah.
Like, even just changing, like, the main character from an adult to a kid. Something that happens pretty often, but then it just goes from there. Have we started talking about the design, or has that all been strategy?
This has been design for like the last 15 minutes.
I had even forgotten. I just got into like a flow state of just talking about this game.
Ah, oh, man, it'll do that.
I don't think I have really much else to say about Pitch Storm.
Yeah, I think that's about it.
Just a great game. It's great as long as you're playgroup can, you know, handle the improv.
And
that might be the one design thing, like they try to help you as much as they can, I guess, for somebody who's not so good at improv. They give you a lot of details, you know, they give you the location in the character card, and they use a lot of tropes, a lot of common themes in movies,
right?
Yeah, and like you mentioned, there's that self-balancing aspect where an executive can decide to give the player a easier note. Technically, in like the team-based game, an executive can choose just not to give a note at all.
Yeah. And I mean, I think when you're designing a game to be an improv game, it becomes really tricky to be able to add stuff, because like improv is a skill that, you know, you learn or you get taught or whatever. There's a limit to how much you are able to help people with. You know, I feel like at some point it's just impossible to make it that open, you know.
Sure.
Yeah. All right. So, I mean, that's just kind of how it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, all right.
So if you think your group would like something like this, it's a really great game. Mm-hmm. So I don't have anything else to say about Pitchstorm, so I believe that would be the end of our episode.
Sounds like it.
All right. Thank you for listening. If you'd like, you can follow us on social media at BG Bros Cast on Facebook and Twitter, where we give notifications or little clues about what our next episode is going to be about. And we also will take your comments there if you have a request for a board game or a topic that you want to hear us cover.
Yeah, we did a listener request just last week.
Yep. We did an episode about auctioning and bidding games. Which was requested by a listener. So if you have a request, hit us up on Facebook and Twitter. Again, that's at BG Bros Cast. You can go to bgbcast.com. That's our website where we have all of our episodes posted and tagged. So if you want to try and find an episode where we talked about a specific game, you're interested to hear our thoughts, you can go to our website. You can look for that tag, that the name of that game, and that'll take you to the episodes where we talked about it. If you don't see an episode where we talked about a game that you want to hear about, then again, hit us up on social media. Also on our website, you can find a link to our TeePublic store. That's teepublic.com/user/BGBcast. That's where we sell our merch. We have t-shirts with our logo on it. If you want to get our logo printed on something else, like a coaster, for example, let us know and we'll put that up on our store for you to purchase. And at that'll be the end of BG Bros plugs. So let's hear it from Matt plugs.
I write articles on the Board Game Bros website under the episodes and articles tab. My most recent article was about the game Enter the Gungeon and how it mixes theme and mechanics. Also I stream on twitch.tv/twack. That is twitch.tv/twak. I stream on most weekdays from 11 a.m. Central Time to about 2 or 3 p.m. Central Time. I play a lot of competitive games, a lot of fighting games, auto chess games recently. I speedrun, I play platformers, I kind of do a mixture of a lot of stuff. And if you show up there, you can talk to me, and also through there you can find a Discord server where you can talk to me, Jeffrey, and other fans of the podcast and the stream.
All right.
Get updates on when I stream.
All right. So that does it for Matt Plugs, and that does it for our episode. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
See ya.